I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Early on in the pandemic, millions of tipped workers, restaurant servers, people who worked at hair and nail salons, who parked cars, drove taxi cabs, were rideshare drivers, among others, were laid off. While some were able to collect unemployment, others were denied because their sub-minimum wage of $2.13 an hour was too low for them to qualify. Think about that. Most tipped workers are women, and many of them are women of color. Now that the service industry is reopening, businesses are finding they cannot find enough workers willing to work for the same low pay. That's especially true for restaurants, where servers have to rely on tips for the majority of their income. It's also a high-stress job dealing with the public, where harassment is common. Our guest is Saru Jayaraman, co-founder and president of One Fair Wage, who is working for better pay and better working conditions for tipped workers. She's co-founder of the Restaurant Opportunities Center United, director of the Food Labor Research Center at the University of California at Berkeley, and author of One Fair Wage, Ending Sub-Minimum Pay in America. Saru Jayaraman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And I want to make sure we get lots of listeners in on the conversation today. Email us, radiotimes@whyy.org. Tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. And call us, 1-888-477-9499. We want to hear from tipped workers, from the people who hire them, especially people working in the restaurant industry. So let's go back 2 years before the pandemic. The restaurant business was really booming. Were servers any better off?
We were already in crisis as an industry pre-pandemic, and I actually, with your permission, would like to go back further than 2 years. I'd like to go back 150 years to say that this industry has been in crisis for 150 years since emancipation of slavery, when the restaurant lobby first wanted to hire newly freed black people after emancipation and not pay them anything. And it was at that moment that they mutated the notion of tipping, which had originated in feudal Europe as an extra or bonus on top of a wage. They mutated it in 1865 at emancipation into being a replacement for wages in order to be able to hire black people for free, to basically continue the notion of free labor that existed during slavery and let tips be the workers' only source of income. At that time, you know, tipped workers in restaurants, but also shoe shiners and the men who worked on the trains, the Pullman car porters, they were mostly black, and in the restaurant industry, mostly women. And they were asked to work for nothing and live on tips. And we went from a $0 wage in 1865 all the way up to $2.13 an hour in 2021 at the federal level. And, of course, $2.83 in the state of Philadelphia. the state of Pennsylvania. So you're talking about a $2 or $3 wage increase in most states in the United States over 150 years. Largely due to the money, power, and influence of a trade lobby called the National Restaurant Association, which represents the chains, the IHOPs, the Denny's, the Applebee's, and has lobbied for a century that they shouldn't have to pay their own workers' wages, that workers should just rely on customer tips. And yes, that had resulted in servers in this country experiencing three times the level of poverty of other workers pre-pandemic, and the absolute highest rates of sexual harassment of any industry. It's now undeniable our industry has the highest rates of sexual harassment because you've got an overwhelmingly female workforce of women tolerating all kinds of inappropriate customer behavior to get those tips. And also racial discrimination. It's also now irrefutable that the data shows undeniably that black workers always get tipped less than white workers. People of color always get tipped less than white workers. And women always get tipped less than men due to implicit bias among customers. And also due to the fact that workers of color get segregated into more casual restaurants where tips are less. And so the whole system has resulted in sexual harassment and incredible amounts of racial bias and incredible amounts of struggle and crisis for these workers long before the pandemic.
Well, let me pick up on at least this one thing that you said there. And I believe this is from research from your organization that black women in restaurants make almost $5 an hour less than white men. Is that because they tend to work in these more chain restaurants where, frankly, you know, you might pay $15 for a meal versus $50 for a meal.
That's one part of it for sure. You're absolutely right that if you work at a Denny's or IHOP or even Olive Garden or Red Lobster, your tips are going to be far less than working at a fancy fine dining restaurant in downtown Philadelphia. But the second reason for that disparity between Black women and white men is that even when Black women and Black people work in fine dining restaurants alongside white servers, they always get tipped less. There's now data that shows that even when they provide what some call perfect service, they always get tipped less because of implicit bias among consumers. And so, you know, we as a country started to acknowledge our long history of structural racism over the last couple of years. And this is one industry in which this kind of structural racism actually stems from our original sin, that legacy of slavery and not wanting to pay Black people at all. And now you've got this ongoing perpetuation of racial inequity because this industry refuses to pay its own workers.
I mean, this is an argument from you, Saru Jayaraman, to get rid of tip work. Is essentially just pay restaurant workers the way you pay an office worker, a way I get paid or you get paid.
Well, to clarify, what we are actually calling for is what we already have in 7 states. So California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Minnesota, Montana, and Alaska all require a full minimum wage for all workers, including restaurant workers, tipped workers. And tips are on top of that, as they were always intended to be from, you know, feudal Europe. In feudal Europe, that is when tipping originated. Nobles and aristocrats would give an extra or bonus to serfs and vassals, but always on top of a wage. And so what we're calling for is what those 7 states have done already, which is just require everybody be paid a full minimum wage and let tips be that extra or bonus on top of that, as they were always meant to be. Listen, those 7 states, and they're not all blue states. You know, they're purple states, they're red states. Those 7 states have higher restaurant industry sales than Pennsylvania, higher job growth, higher overall, you know, restaurant industry growth. Small businesses grow faster in those states. Tipping is higher in those states because it turns out when you pay people, what do? They go spend it and they go tip. And you have 1/2 the rate of sexual harassment in the restaurant industry compared to Pennsylvania. Why? Because it turns out in those states, when you pay a woman a full minimum wage, she isn't as completely dependent on the tips to feed her family. So when a person tries to grab her or touch her, she can say buzz off because she can count on that wage from her boss, like every other worker in every other industry. She gets tips on top of her wage, but she's not entirely dependent on them. If you get $2.13 or $2.83, that wage is so low it goes entirely to taxes. You are so dependent on the tip that you actually have to tolerate all kinds of inappropriate customer behavior to get those tips.
And we'll be talking to a server in about 5 minutes or so. Let me ask you, during the pandemic, obviously many restaurants did close. Some were able to make deliveries or have people pick up. What happened to tipping during that time?
So a lot happened to these workers in our industry. First, as you mentioned earlier, about 6 million restaurant workers lost their jobs in the first shutdown in March 2020. And our data shows that about 2/3 of them across the country were told that they couldn't get unemployment insurance because in most states, their wage were too low. Their subminimum wage was too low to qualify for benefits.
I'm trying to get my brain around that, but I hear you. No, go ahead.
Well, it's like this. You know, the tipping is so erratic, unpredictable, hard to record, often unrecorded, not just by the workers, but often by the employers. And so we had many workers say, I reported my tips religiously, but when I went to apply, they said my employer never reported my tips. And so it looked like I just earned that $2, $3 wage. And they said it looked like you were working less than part-time because your total wages over a 2-week period are so low. And so you don't qualify. And that was a moment, a light bulb moment. That moment in and of itself was a light bulb moment for millions of workers. Wait a second, if the state is telling me I earn too little to qualify for benefits that everybody else is getting, having worked full-time or more than full-time, I probably should have never put up with this in the first place. And a lot of people walked away from the industry at that point. But then last summer, millions went back to work. They found tips were way down because sales were down. And of course, health risks and hostility and customer and sexual harassment were way up. We had hundreds of women say, I'm regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. And so when workers were asked last summer, now we want you to do more for less. We want you to go enforce social distancing and mask rules on the same customers from whom you have to get tips to make up your wages. While you're getting less in tips overall, that was like a breaking point. Millions of workers left. And even this year, did a survey in May of this year for workers who remain in the industry, because millions left last year. So this year, of those who remain, 54% say they're leaving. 78% say the only thing that would make them stay is a full minimum wage with tips on top. And this has resulted in, to me, what is one of the best silver linings of the pandemic. Right. We have tracked over 3,000 restaurants, including hundreds in Pennsylvania, now paying a full minimum wage with tips on top voluntarily in order to recruit staff.
Well, and just to underscore what you just said, obviously describing the devastating impact of the pandemic on tipped workers, especially restaurant workers. But as you say, here's this opportunity, and we're seeing, you know, restaurants desperately trying to hire people, offering bonuses, offering better pay. We're seeing protests. We're seeing shutdowns. We're strikes. Yeah. So we're at this really interesting moment, certainly when it comes to the restaurant industry.
Yeah, it is actually, to me, the most amazing, incredible moment I've seen in over 20 years of organizing, where workers are really standing up for themselves, certainly saying we refuse to work for a $2 wage anymore if you want us to come back. We actually need to see permanent wage increases. What workers are saying is, I hear, you know, we're seeing these individual restaurants raise their wage, but a lot of workers don't want to come back unless they know that the wage increases are permanent, meaning the law, meaning policy. And so that's why we're seeing some renewed momentum around policy change. And what's exciting is we're even seeing employers join that bandwagon and say, listen, I'm raising my wage to get workers to come back. I need everybody to do it. I need a level playing field. But they're also saying, I'm raising my wages and it's not enough. I actually need policy to signal to millions of workers that these wage increases are permanent and it's worth coming back to work in restaurants, because I'll tell you, a lot of workers are feeling right now, it's not even that it's not worth it anymore. I can't even afford to work in restaurants anymore. It costs me more in childcare and transportation to get to work than I get when I get there. And then you are on top of that asking me to risk my life and put up with all kinds of hostility and ridiculous amounts of harassment. I'm done. And until I see some real change, I don't want to come back, even though I love this industry. I take pride in my work. I cannot do this work right now.
Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Saru Jayaraman, co-founder and president of One Fair Wage. It's also the title of her book. We are talking about tipped workers, focusing on people working in restaurants. We got a lot of people that want to join our conversation, and we do want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can give us a call. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. After this short break, we'll be talking with a longtime server and bartender. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and we're talking about the fact that tipped workers were particularly hit hard by the pandemic. Many service industry businesses like restaurants had to close or reduce their hours, lay off staff. Now the economy is opening back up, and many tipped workers, especially in restaurants, have not come back because of low pay, working conditions, and dealing with customers who frankly mistreat them. Our guest Saru Jayaraman says it's not a problem of worker shortage, it's a problem of wage shortage. Joining us now is Kissy Lazo. She's a longtime restaurant industry worker. She's here to talk about her experience as a server and a bartender. And Kissy Lazo, so nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. How many years did you work in the restaurant business?
So I have been working in the restaurant business since 2003. I now am in catering. So I am still kind of, on the in it.
In it, but not as a server directly or as a bartender. What kind of, how many years did you work as a server?
A server and bartender. So I was used in like multiple capacities since 2003 until 2019.
Okay, so a long time. And did you work at a variety of different restaurants or more chain restaurants? What kind of places?
Yeah, so I started at a chain restaurant, Red Lobster, and then I went into independently owned bars and restaurants in Philadelphia.
And were you able to make a living?
So that's the thing, right? Like, you can have like a really good day and make really good money, and then you're like, oh wow, I didn't make anything today, and you live off the mercy of tips. So it's very unstable, and it's not sustainable.
Well, let me get Saru Jayaraman back in on the conversation. You were talking, Saru, about how some servers have to almost degrade themselves during the pandemic in order to get a good tip. Can you expand on that some more? And I want to also hear what Kissy has to say as well.
Yeah, so as Kissy mentioned, it's a totally unstable income, and as a result, servers are very vulnerable to having to tolerate all kinds of inappropriate customer behavior. Always were, even before the pandemic, in order to get those tips. Sometimes it's just crude behavior. Sometimes it's, you know, uncomfortable or hostile. But unfortunately, all too often, it is illegal. It is sexual harassment. And that is why it has now been proven, you know, we partnered with the nation's expert on sexual harassment, the person who actually coined the term sexual harassment, which is Professor Catherine McKinnon,
sure.
On studying this. And in her words, the rate of sexual harassment among tipped restaurant workers dwarfs all other sectors, including the military. And in her words, she has never seen a policy more effective than paying people a full minimum wage, more effective at cutting sexual harassment. In her words, even than naming sexual harassment illegal, which was her life's work. Why? Because again, when you are completely dependent on the tips at a wage of $213, $283, you're going to have to put up with whatever the customer says to you. If they're a man, how they touch you, how they treat you, how they talk to you, you feel like you have to tolerate it. Not only do you feel like you have to tolerate it, the idea of complaining to your boss about it is so limited in our industry. It really results in either some form of retaliation or most employers just saying, ignore it. That's just the way it is. Whereas in a state where you get a full minimum wage, you can actually tell the customer, buzz off. You know, I don't want to put up with this, and walk away from the treatment, because you can count on that wage. In California, that's $15.
Wow.
From your boss, like every other worker in every other industry, and you're not as completely reliant on the tips. And so you don't have to put up with it as much. We did an event a few years ago with Congressmember Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. And, you know, she was a bartender before she became a Congress member. And she said at the event, it's like this. When you work in a sub-minimum wage state, from the 1st to the 15th of the month, if a guy tries to grab you or do something to you, you might say, buzz off. From the 15th to the 30th of the month, when they do things to you, you end up feeling like you have to put up with it, because that's the money you need to pay your rent and your bills come the 1st of the next month. And that fundamentally boils down to what Kissy was saying about the unreliability of this income. It's so unreliable that you're having to put up with all kinds of situations just to get that income.
Kissy, let me get back to you. And even from your experiences, does that sound familiar to you?
Oh, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with Saru, because you are relying on these tips so heavily, you feel like you have to, you know, not only put down a plate of food or a drink, you have to entertain somehow, or have to tolerate, you know, jokes or whatever, because you are relying on this tip from, you know, relying on this person to tip you. So, yeah, absolutely.
And how about things like health benefits? Were you able to have those kinds of perks, Kissy, from the jobs that you had in the restaurant industry?
On and off. I think that is the sad reality of most restaurant workers. We can't afford it. Health insurance is very expensive, and most of us can't afford it. We have to pay for childcare or, you know, we have to eat ourselves, right? So, yeah, it's very unaffordable. Most restaurant workers do not have health insurance, can't afford it.
And you have worked as a bartender as well. Was that any different, working behind the bar versus serving people at a table?
I think working behind the bar is a bit more crude. You know, just like the interactions are a bit more crass. But yeah, I think it's a little tougher behind the bar than at a table. It really honestly depends on the place. But yeah, it's all the same. Yeah.
You worked almost 20 years in the restaurant business and you're now a caterer. Do you think of going back or do you feel like, you know, you're done with this way of life?
I'm never going back.
You're never going back.
I work for this awesome catering company, Happy Hour Hospitality, who pays their employees fair wages and offers health insurance. So yeah, and I'm never doing it again.
I hear you. Well, I really appreciate you joining us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. And that's Kissy Lazo. She's a longtime restaurant industry worker telling us about her experiences as a server, a bartender, and what you have to do to get a good tip. And again, Sarah Jayaraman staying with us for the rest of the hour, co-founder, president of One Fair Wage. And again, you can join us. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and call us at 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about tipped workers, focusing on the restaurant industry. And of course, if you work as a server, you are largely dependent on tips in order to make ends meet, even if you can do that. Let me go back to you, Sarah. You mentioned this sort of whole masking thing during the pandemic. Pull down your mask, and if you're attractive, I'll give you a bigger tip. You call it masculine harassment. Do I have
that's
that?
Right.
Yeah, yes, I mean, you kind of right. coined the phrase. It was yes. that common, or is that common?
Oh, my gosh. So I think it's important to understand that the sexual harassment that existed prior to the pandemic in the industry comes down to the power dynamic between women servers and bartenders and male customers, but frankly, also between women servers and male and any other men in the restaurant, coworkers, managers, back of house staff. And it fundamentally comes down to the fact that she, compared to most everybody else in the restaurant, the customers, the managers, the back of house, has this variable income that is just so fluctuating and is entirely dependent on whether she pleases the customer or not. And that power dynamic is what got so much worse during the pandemic. When you have fewer customers, as you did, because not everybody felt comfortable eating out during the pandemic. In fact, many people still don't feel comfortable eating out. So sales went down, of course, and we all, you know, had a lot of sympathy for restaurant owners. I think there was far less sympathy for the fact that workers who went back to work were dealing with so much more for so much less. Tips were way down because sales were down. And now they were asked to enforce all these rules. And hopefully your guests, your listeners have seen the news. I mean, workers have been punched and even shot. They've been, harangued and yelled at for trying to enforce these rules. Well, for women, it was a step further. It became really life-threatening, with literally thousands of women reporting they're regularly asked, take off your mask so I can see how cute you are before I decide how much to tip you. Basically, I want to judge your appearance to determine how much I want to tip. And it really revealed what many men see tipping as to begin with, even before the pandemic. They see it as a source of power and control over the woman server, that they have the right to determine how much they want to tip based on how much she pleases them. Is she pleasing to them physically? Is she willing to put up with their jokes and crude behavior and even touching? If not, then I will tip you less. And that dynamic was really life-threatening for a lot of women. They felt like, you're telling me I'm having to expose myself and my family, because I take it home, my family, to the virus for the chance, not even a guarantee, but the chance that you'll like my face and want to tip me. We had a member in D.C., a worker leader, who said that she was at the bar one evening and the customer said, pull down your mask so I can see your face. Mm. And she said, no, I cannot. You know, besides the fact she didn't want to, she said, my manager was standing behind me and I knew I'd get in trouble if I did. And so I said no. And the customer responded, well, I guess you're not going to eat tonight.
Oh my gosh.
Because that is the level of power that people feel over these workers. Because of this, it comes back to this system where these workers aren't actually paid a wage from their employer like every other worker in every other industry. And thus, there is this sense among customers, some customers, not all customers, but some customers, that they have all the power to determine whether that worker lives, eats, dies, survives, feeds their children. And I'm sorry, but there's just no other, can you imagine, I'm also a professor, can you imagine any other customer-facing profession, and I do call it a profession because these are skilled professionals in the restaurant industry, can you imagine a professor or a doctor or a lawyer interacting with their clients or customers or students and their pay being so entirely dependent on whether the patient likes the doctor's diagnosis, whether the student likes what the professor is teaching them, whether the lawyer likes what the advice that the customer is giving them, whether they please the person or not. Right. It just doesn't exist. And so, and really the only reason it exists here is because of a real legacy of slavery, which we should be ashamed of, and an ongoing power and influence of a trade lobby that just doesn't want to pay its own workers.
I mean, it's all coming back to me as someone who worked as a server during college in order to be able to pay my bills and what it was like to deal with people. Now, some people were wonderful,
yes.
But you're absolutely right, Sarah. Some people were just monsters, frankly. Let me just read a couple of comments, and I want to get Daniel to join our conversation. Brian says, I'm a small business owner and caterer in Philadelphia. I was a member of ROC and want to praise her heart. This would be to you, Sarah. Praise your hard work and movement. ROC is the Restaurant Opportunities Center. Also, Stu says language matters. Using weaponized words like gig workers hides the plight of those who can't get full-time jobs they need. Using part-timers avoids paying decent wages and benefits, just to underscore what we were talking about earlier. Let me get Daniel to join our conversation. And Daniel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I worked in the restaurant. Good, thanks. I worked in the restaurant business maybe 16, 17 years in Philadelphia, and it did a lot for me. It molded me as a person. I think everyone should go into restaurant work at
me
some
too.
Point in their life so that they learn how to deal with people. With that said, talking about wage, and of course, we all would want our wage to go up. No one likes getting a $0 paycheck every 2 weeks. It's a slap in the face. But if the wage went up, the problem then there is the prices of everything would go up, and the perceived value from the customer would say, well, I'm going to go out less because it's going to cost me more money. Now, I think that that's kind of a double-edged sword, because we want to pay people fair wage, but also we don't want to spend too much money when we go out. But I think that we've been not spending enough money when we go out. We've been putting it in people's pockets, you know, like literally stuffing it in people's pockets versus, you know, just paying the extra money so that there can be fair wage and that so people can get paid and compensated for, rather than sit there and, to be, you know, quite blunt, beg for your money all day.
That's I hear you.
That's what we do. That's what we do.
Well,
and fortunately, you know, no, go ahead.
No. That's I just wanted to pick up on something you said, because I had a question, and I'm sure, sorry, you have heard this as well, which is, well, if you pay tipped workers minimum wage or maybe $15 an hour, then the price of a meal is going to go up and then people aren't going to go out. That's what Daniel, one of the arguments that he's putting forward. What is the response to that?
Well, first, I want to thank Daniel for his comment, and it's so true. Nobody should have to beg for their money. As I said, these are Daniel and others are and have been skilled professionals who deserve to be paid as skilled professionals. And you're right, Daniel, we should all pay for, if we want the skilled professionals to serve us and cook for us, we should be willing to pay for that, as we would in any other business and any other enterprise. But to the point of menu prices going up, we've actually looked at the 7 states that are paying a full minimum wage with tips on top. And we have compared the chain restaurants, the national restaurants that are in Pennsylvania and states with a sub minimum wage versus states like Oregon and Washington and Alaska and Montana and California that pay a full minimum wage. And frankly, Applebee's, Denny's, IHOP, Olive Garden, even the fine dining restaurants, prices are identical.
Wow.
They are identical. And it is because that over many years, these companies have realized that, in fact, their sales are higher And there's lots of efficiencies that come with paying people more. On the one hand, what do those people do when they get paid more? They go out and they spend it. And you know this, Daniel, restaurant workers spend more in the restaurant industry than other people. They tend to eat out and drink out more. Like they're these sin nights, service industry nights. Everybody goes and eats out in good times, and they get, and they tip better. Restaurant workers tip better than other people because they know what it's like. And so as a result, sales are higher, tipping is higher, but also you see people last longer in the industry. So you have less turnover, which costs businesses a lot of money. And so there are all these efficiencies. And as a result, prices are not higher in those seven states. I live in California. I welcome people to come check it out or just go online and look at an Applebee's menu in Fresno or Bakersfield or San Francisco compared to Philly. And you will find the prices are identical. Even the CFO of Denny's admitted in a shareholder call earlier this year that, in fact, paying $15 plus tips has resulted in Denny's with no higher prices actually outperforming the system in California compared to all their states. They're larger and faster growing as a company in California than all other states. Why, he said, because of increased consumer spending, because our workers go out and they spend it, guess where? They come eat at Denny's, they bring their families because they can actually afford to do so. This is the sad reality, is that a lot of workers can't actually afford to eat out in the way that they used to. And so the industry is really hurting its own ability to have a strong consumer base. And that's what it comes down to. And I'll just say one last thing. We've actually looked at what it would cost, even assuming there is some moderate price increases, and they are moderate. When we've looked across the country at any time wages have gone up, there are moderate price increases that occur with the UC Berkeley labor economists at UC Berkeley. They have measured that has never gone higher than an 18 to 20% price increase. So for a wage to go from $2 to $15 over, let's say, 5 to 10 years, because none of these bills actually require them to go up overnight. They require them to go up over several years. You're talking about if your burger was $10 or your meal was $10 now, it would go up to $12 over 5 to 10 years, 20%. You know, that's the most we've ever seen. But these national chains, these national companies, they've actually managed to keep their prices exactly the same because of all the efficiencies.
We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about why it's important and necessary to pay tipped workers a livable wage, why it would not just benefit them, but the economy. We've been focusing on restaurants who are having a hard time hiring servers because of low wages and stressful working conditions, and clearly harassment is part of the problem. Our guest is Sarah Jayaraman, and she is president of One Fair Wage, the title of her new book called One Fair Wage, Ending Sub-Minimum Pay in America. Joining us now is Olivia Caceres, and she is general manager of Martha, which is a restaurant in Kensington. And Olivia, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. How did Martha fare during the the height of the pandemic?
I mean, obviously, just as all bars and restaurants, it was a struggle and just constantly pivoting. Really have to thank owner and the person who started Martha, Johnny Muglinski, for constantly, you know, thinking on his toes and constantly trying to figure out a way to keep people employed during such a trying time. But we are lucky because we're not quite through it, obviously, with this new variant, but we're seeing the other side and finding a new normal.
Well, you've done an interesting thing. You add 20% to every bill, and I'll just read something that you give out to your customers. Of note, Martha adds a 20% service fee to all dine-in and dine-out checks. This allows us to offer our employees a fair wage and health benefits. If you have any questions or concerns, we encourage you to let us know. What was the thinking behind that, Olivia?
Well, I mean, that's the cost of dining. You know, it's not just a plate of food and a beverage. It's the worker that, you know, prepped that dish and spent hours beforehand making it. It's the server who is serving that dish and running around the restaurant and taking care of guests. There's more that goes into, you know, the cost of a plate versus face value. So that 20% is going to pay our staff a livable wage, our base hourly rate. At Martha, everybody makes here at least $20 an hour with the ability to make more. That's just a start for us, and that's our model that we've recently put in place. And we really want that to stick and to work for our staff members as well.
Do customers add a tip on top of that, or do they see that as their tip, or does that matter?
So we have an option to, if you so choose. We have a line that's specifically listed as an extra tip. So if a guest truly feels the need or felt like they had a really lovely time and wants to add an extra dollar or two, it really goes a long way for us as well. But that 20% is built in place to pay our staff.
And what happens during a slow week?
So what Martha does is that that service fee, let's say if we're really slow or it's rainy or, you know, right now where some people are a little bit weary about going out, rightfully so, Martha has a buffer. So if our service fee does not make up the wage so that each staff member can make at least $20 an hour, Martha makes up the difference.
Wow. Wow. Well, I think I know the answer to this question, but I feel the need to ask it. So what is your retention rate for people who work at Martha's?
So I've only been here the past 6 months. My husband, Daniel, the other general manager, has been on and off here for the past 5 years. Him and I kind of started full time at the same time and made these changes pretty early on. And we can thankfully report that over this past 6 months, we haven't really had too much of staff changes or really needed to hire, which we're very lucky about. I know that's not the case for everyone. We really care here about Martha, about creating a sense of stability in an industry that isn't always stable.
Well, let me get Saru Jayaraman back in the conversation. Saru, is this a model that you see as a workable model for other restaurants? Olivia, hold on. Let me get Saru back in on the conversation. No, that's okay. And I'll go back to you. Go ahead, Saru.
I think during the pandemic and actually after the murder of George Floyd, we were approached by actually thousands of restaurant owners across the country looking for help to figure out a new model because there was an understanding that A, this is a legacy of slavery, and B, it has created really unacceptable racial inequities in among workers. And so many people, really there are three models. One is just paying people a full minimum wage and let the tips be on top of that and shared among all non-management staff. Some people were trying a gratuity-free model, but a lot of people were gravitating towards the model that Martha is using of a service charge. And there are a couple of advantages towards a service charge. It really gets rid of that implicit bias. If there's an automatic gratuity of 20% or whatever the number is, it's not really allowing a customer to say, I'm going to determine my gratuity or tip based on how I like your face or your look or what I think how you pleased me. So it gets rid of that sort of bias that is really at the root of both the racial inequity and the sexual harassment. And it really just sets a common standard for everybody. And then that gratuity can be shared, again, among all non-management workers, which really creates a level of equity also among the workers. And so a lot of employers are looking at this model as a model that creates more stability and a model that really addresses many of the inequities that we see in our industry. It's also, frankly, easier for customers. A customer doesn't have to think, oh, do I do 15 or 10 or 20 or 25? And that is kind of always an awkward and painful moment for a customer at the end of the meal. It really just, there's a set gratuity, you know it at the beginning, and it makes it easier and a lot more stable, of course, for the workers.
Olivia, let me go back to you just quickly. I know you have an interesting way that you do health insurance reimbursement as well. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so if a staff member is full-time with Martha, meaning over 30 hours a week, Martha will start off by paying half of their insurance, and that goes off up every 10% every year. So let's say a full-time employee works with us for 5 years, Martha would pay for 100% of their insurance. And not every restaurant group has the ability to necessarily offer insurance that's actually affordable for staff members, and that's something that specifically Johnny really wanted to make happen, especially during this pandemic, to make sure that people, you know, can have a livable wage and can take care of themselves.
Final question. What's a special time for you in the restaurant? At Martha's, is there a special time for you? Opening up, closing down in the middle of all the hubbub? What?
I mean, I think it's the very beginning of service and seeing Martha all set up and getting our staff ready and talking about, you know, menu changes for the day. It's kind of, it feels normal again. It feels like a real bar. It feels like a real restaurant when we're, you know, trying the new glass of wine on the menu and discussing it and talking about getting excited about selling it to guests. And I really miss that. There is this kind of very sterile feeling about how service has been through the pandemic, and having a little bit more, you know, human connection now is definitely exciting.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you joining us, Olivia Caceres. Thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. She's general manager of Martha, and that's a restaurant in Kensington. Saru Jayaraman staying with us for the rest of the hour. Again, president of One Fair Wage, and that's the title of her new book as well. So let me read this tweet from Mitri, because I want to, we need to respond to this. He says, your depiction of restaurant workers earning $2.83 in Pennsylvania is wrong, because workers are entitled to the higher minimum wage of $7.25 an hour or $2.83 plus tips. That gets to this question of wage theft that I know that you have written about, but just this idea of, yeah, you have this sub-minimum wage, but people are supposed to be paid, you know, a regular minimum wage. Talk about the difference and how that can be problematic.
Yeah. So the law does say that employers are supposed to ensure that tips bring workers to the full minimum wage if they get paid a sub-minimum wage. Well, the Obama administration tested that out. They did a huge blitz of enforcement during the Obama administration. The U.S. Department of Labor, we saw the highest levels of enforcement trying to see if employers are actually making up that difference and trying to get them to do so. And they found an 84% violation rate.
Wow.
With regard to employers actually ensuring, going back and ensuring for every hour that a worker works, that tips bring you to the full minimum wage, and that all the rules surrounding that two-tiered wage system, which are meant to protect workers, are followed, are complied with. And listen, I really feel for employers. It's a very complicated system. When you try to pay people two different wages and you have to go back and count for every hour, did tips bring the person to the full minimum wage? Were they interacting with guests at least 80% of the time, which is part of the rule? It's actually much simpler and cleaner to pay everybody a full minimum wage and let tips be shared among non-management staff. And we actually studied this and found that restaurants in Los Angeles, where workers are paid a full minimum wage, had one-third the rate of lawsuits as restaurants in New York City, where there's a sub-minimum wage. So it's clearly better for employers, a lot less liability. But the truth is that this is not, it's not just sometimes not enforced. It's the norm that this is not enforced, not complied with. Most workers don't ever know whether their tips bring them to the full minimum wage. Most employers don't go back and count it. It's just too complicated. And so, but here's the thing. Even if that law were complied with 100% of the time and employers always went back and made sure that tips brought you to the full minimum wage, you'd still have a two-thirds majority workforce of women having to tolerate all kinds of inappropriate customer behavior to get tips to bring them to the full minimum wage. So it doesn't take away the vulnerability that comes with living off of customer tips as opposed to getting a full minimum wage. So A, the law is not complied with, and B, even if it were, it's just not a tenable system, or one, frankly, that workers in this day and age are willing to accept. You know, regardless of any argument, pretty much workers are done. they have walked. We've counted at this point, we're looking at government data, 1.2 million restaurant workers have left the industry. Wow. And 54% are saying they're going to leave. And 78% are saying the only thing that would make them stay or come back is a full livable wage with tips on top. So workers are saying it's not working. Even if that law exists, it's not working, and we have to move to a new system.
And I do want to read some more comments, but also something from Jennifer Barrier. She's the Pennsylvania Secretary of Labor and Industry, had a piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer today. Our economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic depends on what we do now in response to the demands of American workers for fair pay, paid time off, and safer working conditions. And the minimum wage in Pennsylvania today is $7.25 an hour. Try raising a family on that. Let me just read a couple of comments, and then I do want to talk to you about the National Rifle Association. I know you call it the other NRA, the National Restaurant Association, but let me just read some comments here. Cheryl says, all my friends who work or have worked in the restaurant industry are the best tippers ever. A tweet from Sabrina, I just started a new server position that guarantees a minimum of $16 an hour. You're paid $8 an hour with tips covering the rest. If the tips don't meet 16, the owners pay the difference. Anything over 16 goes to the servers as a bonus pay, which usually gets you up to $20 to $25 an hour. A comment from Charlie, I agree with one fair wage and say tipping is good. The IRS taxing tips is a disgrace. Well, let me ask you about the National Restaurant Association, as you say, the other NRA. And I'm assuming, these are the lobbying organization for these chain restaurants that we see all over the place. I mean, it seems to me, in the restaurant industry, you've got the more high-end, independently owned restaurants, and then you've got the chains. Is it two different worlds, two different worldviews?
Well, for a long time pre-pandemic, it was. And then I think a lot of the independent restaurants during the pandemic saw the chains that lead the National Restaurant Association go after that PPE money last year and honestly eat it all up, even before a lot of the independent restaurants were able to access it. And so a lot of independent restaurants started to realize that the National Restaurant Association wasn't for them, wasn't speaking for them, wasn't advocating for them, and ended up forming independent restaurant associations all over the country that have been much more willing to talk with us about increasing equity and wages across the sector. Unfortunately, those chains and the restaurant associations still set the standards, though. I mean, they're the ones that are the lobbying force on Capitol Hill and in state legislatures. And sadly, they have a lot of influence over both parties, so that the bills that even President Biden has been behind, the Raise the Wage Act, which would end the minimum wage for tipped workers and raise the wage to $15 an hour, President Biden has been 1,000% behind that. But the Restaurant Association has blocked it from moving, with a lot of Republicans and some Democrats opposing that because of the Restaurant Association. And so the time has come for workers and independent restaurants and consumers to stand together and say, enough is enough is enough. We're not going to have the dining experience we had pre-pandemic unless we change this in the law, because workers aren't going to put up with it anymore. And consumers don't want to subsidize multi-million dollar corporations with their tips anymore. Everybody wants to be paid a fair pay for fair days of work. Let's just make this a wage already and treat these workers as the professionals that they are. And so we need everybody's help to let state legislators and Congress know it's time to end this legacy of slavery. Let's just pass the Raise the Wage Act in Congress. Let's pass the bill in Pennsylvania and other states to just pay everybody $15 an hour with tips on top.
We got to leave it there. Thank you so much, Saru Jayaraman. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she is president of One Fair Wage. She has a book, the same title, One Fair Wage, Ending Sub-Minimum Pay in America. Appreciate all those comments and calls that we got related to tipped workers, especially in the restaurant business. To replay this hour and many more hours of Radio Times, you can go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. You can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find us on Facebook and follow us on at WHYY Radio Times on Instagram and Twitter. Charlie Kyer, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show is produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.